Oh, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Raita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinatha Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Nabhadweep Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jumuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Ma Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Gustaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Pacharane. Nirvasesa Sunivadi Paskachade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamstra Panchakapa Chubishaki Vasindavi Evata Patitanam Pavane Vilvaishnavi Vinoanma Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It is September 23rd, 2020, class in Hawaii over the internet, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4. Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaj's meeting with the four Kumaras, text 36. Pare vare chaye baba.
Pare vare chaye baba.
Yunavati karadanu.
Yunavati karadanu.
Na te sham vidyate kshemam.
Na te sham vidyate kshemam.
Isha vidan. Sita shita 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 shisham boha.
Isha vidam sita shisham.
Please chant. Pare.
Pare.
In the higher status of life.
In the higher status of life.
Avare.
Avare.
In the lower status of life.
In the lower status of life.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Yay.
Yay.
All those.
All those.
Bhavaha.
Bhavaha.
Conceptions.
Conceptions.
Guna.
Guna.
Material qualities.
Material qualities.
Vyatikarat.
Vyatikarat.
By interaction.
By interaction.
Anu.
Anu.
Following.
Following.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Tesham.
Tesham.
Of them.
Of them.
Vidyate.
Vidyate.
Exist.
Exist.
Shemam.
Shemam.
Correction.
Correction.
Isha.
Isha.
The Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Lord.
Vidvamsita.
Vidvamsita.
Destroyed.
Destroyed.
Ashisham.
Ashisham.
Of the blessings.
Srila
Prabhupada's translation. We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life, but we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In our material existence, we accept a higher form of life as a blessing and a lower form as a curse. This distinction of higher and lower only exists as long as the different material qualities, gunas, interact. In other words, by our good qualities, we are elevated to the higher planetary systems or to a higher standard of life, good education, beautiful body, etc. These are the results of pious activities. Similarly, by impious activities, we remain illiterate, get ugly bodies, a poor standard of living, etc. But all these different states of life are under the laws of material nature through the interaction of the qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance. However, all these qualities will cease to act at the time of dissolution of the entire cosmic manifestation. The Lord therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 8.16, Abrahma bhuvanal loka punara vartino arjuna mam upecha tukanteya punar janman vijite. Even though we elevate ourselves to the highest planetary system by the scientific advancement of knowledge or by the religious principles of life, great sacrifices and fruitive activities, at the time of dissolution, these higher planetary systems and life on them will be destroyed. In this verse, the words Isha, Vidvam, Shita, Shisham indicate that all such blessings will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. We will not be protected. Our bodies, either in this planet or in another planet, will be destroyed. And again, we will have to remain for millions of years in an unconscious state within the body of Mahavishnu. And again, when the creation is manifested, we have to take birth in different species of life and begin our activities. Therefore, we should not be satisfied simply by promotion to the higher planetary systems. We should try to get out of the material cosmic manifestation, go to the spiritual world, and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is our highest achievement. We should not be attracted by anything material, higher or lower, but should consider them all on the same level. Our real engagement should be in inquiring about the real purpose of life and rendering devotional service to the Lord. Thus, we will be eternally blessed in our spiritual activities, full of knowledge and bliss. Regulated human civilization promotes dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. In human society, there must be religion. Without religion, human society is only animal society. Economic development and sense gratification must be based on religious principles. When religion, economic development, and sense gratification are adjusted, liberation from this material birth, death, old age, and disease is assured. In the present age of Kali, however, there is no question of religion and liberation. People have taken interest only in economic development and sense gratification. Therefore, despite sufficient economic development all over the world, dealings in human society have become almost animalistic. When everything becomes grossly animalistic, dissolution takes place. This dissolution is to be accepted as Isha, Vidam, Sita, Shisham. The Lord's so-called blessings of economic development and sense gratification will be conclusively dissolved by destruction. At the end of this Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as the incarnation of Kalki, and his only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. After that killing, another golden age will begin. We should therefore know that our material activities are just like childish play. Children may play on the beach, and the father will sit and watch this childish play, the construction of buildings with sand, the construction of walls, and so many things. But finally, the father will ask the children to come home. Then everything is destroyed. Persons who are too much addicted to the childish activities of economic development and sense gratification are sometimes especially favored by the Lord when he destroys their construction of these things. It is said by the Lord, Yastyaham anugrinami harishyetad dhanam shanai. The Lord told Yudhisthira Maharaj that his special favor is shown to his devotee when he takes away all the devotee's material opulences. Generally, therefore, it is experienced that Vaishnavas are not very opulent in the material sense. When a Vaishnava pure devotee tries to be material opulent and at the same time desires to serve the Supreme Lord, his devotional service is checked. The Lord, in order to show him a special favor, destroys his so-called economic development and material opulences. Thus, the devotee, being frustrated in his repeated attempts at economic development, ultimately takes solid shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. This kind of action may also be accepted as Isha, Vidvan, Sita, Shisham, whereby the Lord destroys one's material opulences, but enriches one in spiritual understanding. In the course of our preaching work, we sometimes see that materialistic persons come to us and offer their obeisances to take blessings, which means they want more and more material opulences. If such material opulences are checked, such persons are no longer interested in offering obeisances to the devotees. Such materialistic persons are always concerned about their economic development. They offer obeisances to saintly persons or the Supreme Lord and give something in charity for preaching work with the view that they will be rewarded with further economic development. However, when one is sincere in his devotional service, The Lord obliges the devotee to give up his material development and completely surrender unto him. Because the Lord does not give blessings of material opulence to his devotee, people are afraid of worshipping Lord Vishnu, because they see that the Vaishnavas, who are worshippers of Lord Vishnu, are poor in superficial material opulences. Such materialistic persons, however, get immense opportunity for economic development by worshipping Lord Shiva, for Lord Shiva is the husband of Goddess Durga, the proprietor of this universe. By the grace of Lord Shiva, a devotee gets the opportunity to be blessed by the Goddess Durga. Ravana, for example, was a great worshipper and devotee of Lord Shiva, and in return he got all the blessings of Goddess Durga, so much so that his whole kingdom was constructed of golden buildings. In Brazil, in this present age, huge quantities of gold have been found, and from historical references in the Puranas, we can safely guess that this was Ravana's kingdom. This kingdom was, however, destroyed by Lord Ramachandra. By studying such incidents, we can understand the full meaning of Isha Vidvan Sita Shisham. The Lord does not bestow material blessings upon the devotees, for they may be entrapped again in this material world by continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. Due to materialistic opulences, persons like Ravana become puffed up for sense gratification. Ravana even dared kidnap Sita, who was both the wife of Lord Ramachandra and the goddess of fortune, thinking that he would be able to enjoy the pleasure potency of the Lord. But actually, by such action, Ravana became Vidvan Sita, or ruined. At the present moment, human civilization is too much attached to economic development and sense gratification, and is therefore nearing the path of ruination. Pare vare chaye bhava guna vyati karadanu na te sham vijitek shemam isha vidvam shita shisham. We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life, but we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. So often we give evidences for the existence of God by talking about God as the Creator. One of the main evidences given, not just by devotees of Krishna, Hare Krishna devotees, or Vaishnavas, but in any religion, whether they're Muslims or Christians or Jews or whoever, that there must be a God, is to look at creation. How could things have come into effect without an intelligent source? How can things have come into being by some sort of random chance? How could matter have become conscious of itself, and so forth? And sometimes we make an argument based on maintenance. We talk about, you know, the orbits of the planets, the changing of the seasons, and so forth. But this particular verse is speaking not about creation or maintenance, but destruction. And in one sense, we may see destruction as being something negative. After all, it's Lord Shiva who's in charge of destruction, which is perhaps particularly interesting because Srila Prabhupada is talking about Lord Shiva here as being the source of material opulences. But Lord Shiva is in charge of destruction. And the concept of Lord Shiva, a member of Indusru Prabhu, saying that the Christian concept of the devil may have something to do with Lord Shiva, with his trident and being in charge of the ghosts and the hobgoblins. And when Lord Shiva was manifested from the forehead of Lord Brahma in response to Lord Brahma's anger at the four Kumaras, the 11 Rudras were created and they started destroying the universe, and Brahma said, no, it's not time now. So we may associate, naturally we associate destruction with Lord Shiva, and we may associate destruction of things with hobgoblins and ghosts and demons, and they like to destroy things, and good people build them up, right, or maintain them. But destruction is also, in one sense, under the control of the Lord. I mean, we can say also that it's Durga who destroys Svististhiti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktireka Chaeva Yasi Bhuvanarni Bivarti Durga Ichchana Rupa Apiyasta Chaisitesa. That Durga, who is like the shadow of the Lord, is engaged in creation, maintenance, and pralaya, and destruction. But ultimately, we know anything that's done by Lord Shiva or anything that's done by Durga Devi is ultimately done by the Lord. And In this verse, we are talking about the Lord himself, and that he is the destroyer. He's the destroyer even of things that appear to be blessings. Right? Ashisham, he destroys blessings. And Prabhupada spends the whole purport talking about the concept of the Lord destroying blessings. But let's look at all the things that the Lord destroys. So, and how expert he is at destruction. Because one of the main arguments we have against atheism, believe it or not, is how expert the Lord is at destruction. How expert the Lord is at destruction. So the Lord destroys all bodies, right? Kalosmi, I am death, I am time. I have come to engage all people. Of course, sometimes it is said, again, that in that form he is. That is the form of Lord Shiva that he's talking about. But all things are destroyed. So where I am in the world right now, it's the autumn, and I was out today noticing that the leaves are starting to turn different colors. You know, they turn beautiful colors in the autumn, but those beautiful colors are death for the leaves. And then we go on a walk, we see the dead bodies of the trees, or, you know, every day we see, I'm in a very country setting, so every day we see some dead insect. Sometimes when we take a walk on the road, we see a dead animal. So there was a dead opossum on the road. For those of you who don't know what an opossum is, they're the only marsupials that live in North America. And if you don't know what a marsupial is, that's a creature like a kangaroo that has a little pouch. So it was a dead opossum. They were kind of stupid animals. They often get run over on the side of the road. So there's all these, you know, dead bodies. Our body will also die, and our body will also be destroyed. And when our bodies are destroyed, what do? Right? They turn back into, unless they're artificially preserved, they turn back into their original elements. Right? If you just leave a dead body outside, then the creatures, various creatures, the insects, the animals, and so forth, will eat the body, and then they'll pass it out as stool and urine, which will fertilize the land, and eventually even the bones disintegrate and go back into the earth. If the body is burned, then just like we eat food, all of the food we eat indirectly comes from sunlight, and all the food we eat comes from sunlight and water and earth minerals, and if you burn the body, so that gets released, like if you burn a tree, a tree's dead body. So the sunlight that we've eaten turns back into the heat and light of fire, and the water we've drunk turns into the smoke, and the earth minerals turn into the ashes, and everything goes back to its original state. And this is true with the destruction of all bodies. So modern science is not very good at this. Modern science has a real problem with destruction. Right? What the oceans are now, they say there's more plastic than fish in the oceans. Right? We have all these kinds of trash that we don't know how to dispose of, that's lasting now for, you know, hundreds or thousands of years, our plastic trash. So plastic is made from petroleum. And, you know, it's part of the natural cycle of things, but the scientists put it into a form that doesn't degrade, that doesn't go back into the life cycle, right? We create so many artificial chemicals as medicines, Krishna says, on the healing herb. But, you know, if you use herbs as medicines, again, everything goes back into the life cycle. But when they make these pharmaceuticals, often based on plants, they're such that after people take these drugs, they go into people's urine, it goes into the water system, it affects the fish, it affects other people. We're all drinking psychotropic drugs and hormones and all kinds of things. So they don't know how to destroy these things. They create some drug, they create some medicine. They don't know how to destroy it. They create containers, they don't know how to destroy them. They have no idea how to break it back down again. And so it becomes a big burden on the earth. You know, I remember when we were first visiting India, and when people were using clay pots and leaf plates. I remember we were in Jagannath Puri and we got some prasadam from the Jagannath temple, and it was in clay pots and leaf plates. And when we were finished, I said, "Where do we throw this away?" They said, "Just throw it on the ground." And I was really horrified. I'm like, "I don't throw my rubbish on the ground, you know." We threw it on the ground, and immediately some cow came and ate the leaf plate, and the clay cup broke into bits, and, you know, within the next day, it was just part of the earth again. And now that plastic has been introduced in India, now you see just piles of rubbish everywhere. You know, I work with a project, Radha Saver, where we clean in the Radhakund Govardhan area, and sometimes people from out of the area come on a festival day to distribute prasadam, and they'll distribute prasadam on styrofoam plates. Then the whole Parikrama Marg is just covered with these styrofoam plates. You know, and then the people from out of town, they go away and they think, oh, I've done a good deed by distributing prasadam. So the modern persons, modern scientists, they don't know how to destroy. Krishna not only destroys bodies, he destroys whole civilizations. Right? The archaeologists will dig and they'll find a whole civilization that had existed. You know, whether it's something sudden like in Pompeii where, you know, there's incredible preservation, or whether it's something that happened over some period of time, the civilizations are destroyed. But again, a new civilization is built up. All of the destruction is done perfectly so that it gives rise to new life. It gives rise to new civilizations. So it's part of the natural cycle of purification. All of the death and the destruction that's engineered by Krishna is part of a cycle of nourishment. It's part of a cycle of rebirth. It's, you know, the old dead tree dies and fertilizes the land so that the little seeds can grow. If we think about the Varnashram system, where the old people retire, they get out of the way so the young people can flourish, right? So the young people can fulfill their desires. And there's also death so that the individual can fulfill their various desires. You know, you can fulfill your desires as a man, as a woman, as a human, as a demigod, as a creature, and so forth. This Parabara, these different higher and lower statuses of life, are all there to fulfill different desires. And so there's destruction and creation. Now, on the path of bhakti, Krishna also is a destroyer. He's a destroyer of that which is coming between the devotee and himself. So he's the perfect destroyer when it comes to the material nature as part of the cycle of life, as part of the cycle of rebirth, in ways that humans can't do. And he's also the perfect destroyer in terms of our spiritual life. And there also, he's a destroyer in ways that human beings can't do. You know, human beings can create plastic, but they can't destroy it. Right? They create disposable diapers, but they can't destroy them. They create amazing textiles, synthetic textiles, that then clog up the waterways with all these microfibers that, again, can't be destroyed. And in a similar way, we take on many obstacles and anarthas. We create obstacles and anarthas that we're not able to destroy, despite our greatest endeavor. Right? I think all of us, if we're honest, we would say that we have some bad habit, or we have maybe even an addiction, something that we're just not able to get rid of. We try, maybe we're successful for a while, and then again it comes back, and we just become very, very frustrated. You know, and the people who love us will say, you know, would you please not do that? Oh, I'm sorry. I'll try not to do it again, you know, and then we do it again, and we do it again, and we do it again. And although in one sense, by the influence of the modes of nature, we've created these bad habits, we've created these addictions, we've created these ways of being and these personality traits that are harmful, despite our best efforts, we can't get rid of them. You know, we'll read different books and take different courses, and we can take vows. I heard about a devotee at initiation, and I do not recommend doing things like this, who took a vow that he would not speak or hear or read any criticism of devotees. And I thought, wow, you know, you're going to have to isolate yourself in a soundproof room for the rest of your life. You know, what are you going to do about that? And because we know that it is in the Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami says that it is the Uttama Adhikaris who are free from the propensity to criticize others. So if you're not an Uttama Adhikari and you have a propensity to criticize others, you know, it's going to come out sometimes. regardless of your vows, regardless of your good intentions. And so this kind of thing happened. But Krishna destroys these things. He destroys these obstacles. Whatever it may be, if Krishna sees there's any obstacle, I mean, just think about this in our human relations. So in our human relationships, there are certain things that are obstacles. Yes, and any long-term relationship that we have, there are certain things that the parties in that long-term relationship choose to just ignore and tolerate, isn't it? Right? They just say, well, that's just the way this person is. You know, so I visited one family where the wife was always late to meals. You know, husbands, even if she was cooking, so the husband was there, the children were there, and where was the wife and mother? She was always late. She'd always be doing something else. Please come sit down and eat. Please come sit down and eat. And she wouldn't come. And I visited families where it's the husband who's like that. You know, please come and eat. I cooked, everything's hot, would you come and eat? Or where the children are like, and it goes on and on for years and years and years, and someone can say, you know, well, this really bothers me, it's nice if you would be here, and the person goes, yes, 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 yes. And they don't change. You know, or would you please put your laundry in the laundry hamper? Or, you know, I visited a family where when the man put on tilak in the morning, he would get tilak on the mirror. And so the other family members in the house would say, look, every time we go in the bathroom, there's tilak all over the mirror, would you please clean it up? And they told me, they said, you know, after a few years, we just stopped even saying anything, right? We stopped even bothering to say anything, because what's the point of saying something to a person who just doesn't listen? You know, how many times can we keep saying the same thing? So we find that with the people we live intimately with, that they have certain habits, they have certain ways of being that may be extremely annoying, that may be putting other people into difficulty, and they simply don't change. They don't change. They say, I'll change. They say, yes, I'll come to dinner on time. Yes, I'll clean up the mirror. You know, I'll remember to call you if I'm going to be late, or some whatever it may be, you know, that irritates us about other people. And the same that irritates us about ourselves. You know, I have things about myself that irritate me. And that I find unable to change even for my own happiness. And some of these things may appear as blessings. Yes, some of our obstacles may appear as blessings. Yes, so I have one very good friend, and this is true to a large extent about myself also, but I have one very good friend who has the ability to see the fault in anything. He can always find out what the fault is. Now, that can be a very good blessing. If you're going to be an inspector, let's say you're going to inspect construction, or you're going to be proofreading a book, you know, or you're going to be checking a computer program for bugs. So there are people right now making hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars being bug checkers and programs. They go into a system and they test every possible way the system could fail, so they can check where are the weaknesses, where are the weaknesses. So that's a great blessing to be able to do that. But it's also an obstacle, because then in your human relationships you'll always be finding faults. Right? Or a great blessing might be, Prabhupada talks about a lot of wealth. So a lot of wealth is a great blessing. You can do so much service for the Lord as far as your own personal life. You don't need to worry about where you're going to get food, where you're going to get clothing. You can focus your time on hearing and chanting and preaching and service without having to worry about the other things of life. But it could also be an obstacle. You become very proud and think, yes, Ishwaraham aham bogi siddaham. I am simply, you know, the enjoyer. I am my money has given me power. My money is my shelter. You know, my money is my security. Now I can boss people around because I have a lot of money. I can use my money to manipulate people. So it may seem like a blessing, right? But on one hand, it is a blessing. And on another hand, it may become a problem. Or one may have a wonderful family and friends. And one may be very attached to one's family and friends. Or one may have a wonderful job that one loves. And we think, I was just hearing this the other day, someone who has a wonderful job and how much he loves his job. and how much it's, you know, just perfectly what he wants. But we can also, it can be an obstacle in bhakti if we're thinking, you know, this is who I am. I am a this, I am a that. I have this upadhi. Just hearing Prabhupada speak about this today. And I have that upadhi. So we have all of these obstacles. We have things about our bad qualities, our conditioned nature, our addictions, our attachments, and even our opulences. We talked about wealth, beauty. You know, Prabhupada, one time, this group of people were meeting with him, and one of them was an exceptionally beautiful woman. And Prabhupada pointed it out. He said, "You are very beautiful. Use that in Krishna's service." We have devotees who've used their beauty. You know, one devotee who was a fashion model, and she used that platform to preach Krishna consciousness and so forth. But it can also be an obstacle that one can use one's beauty to incite lust and to incite envy. And again, to think, you know, I can control people in this way. And as I said, we find that destroying these things ourselves, it's just as hard as destroying plastic. You know, it's very, very difficult. It's very frustrating. You know, what I've read about people who are addicted to intoxicants, unfortunately, I've not had that experience in this life, is that they have to consider themselves lifetime addicts. Right? They can never say, well, you know, now I'm not an addict anymore. They might say, well, I'm 30 years sober, 30 years clean. But every day they make a determination, okay, I'm not going to drink today, I'm not going to take this drug today. And they have to be careful their whole life, who they associate with, where they go. At any moment, they're at danger of falling back into their old habits. You know, it's always a struggle. And this can be even, you know, people are addicted to food or gambling or so many things like that. So Krishna can destroy these things, whether they appear to us as blessings or whether they appear to us as difficulties, however we may think about them, Krishna can destroy them. And in order to please his devotees, that's exactly what he does. You know, and sometimes the devotees don't like that. Because even though our situations in this world can be giving us a lot of trouble, we still may feel, well, you know, This defines me, and this is what I have for my happiness. But Krishna will destroy all of them if we let him. If we open up our hearts and our lives. You know, and I know this is one of the principles of why Alcoholics Anonymous is very, is very successful. Because they say, they start off with their 12-step program, we admit our inability, alcohol has become more powerful than us. We are powerless over alcohol. And we admit our inability and we surrender to a higher power. So the devotee sees Krishna's destruction as perfect. Right? Srila Prabhupada, this purport really reminds me about Srila Prabhupada's own life and how he saw his own life and how Srila Prabhupada was told by his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Prabhupada, to preach in English to English-speaking people, to preach in the Western countries. And Srila Prabhupada thought, well, to do that, I'm going to have a lot of money. So it was one of the reasons Prabhupada had to have some livelihood for his family, but he also felt, let me have a livelihood for preaching. And his business had become very successful. He was able to give some big donations to the Gaudiya Math and help with temple construction. And then at a certain point, everything collapsed, and it collapsed because of internal problems in the business. So everything collapsed. His family life fell apart. His business fell apart. And Srila Prabhupada said, first he was thinking, well, I must have made some mistake, and Krishna is angry with me. He's punishing me by taking everything away like this. And then he remembered this verse that he quotes here in the purport. All right, let's find this again. Yes, yaham anugrinati harishye taddinam shanai. And this verse is quoted in the context that Prabhupada speaks about in the purport of Maharaj Yudhisthira asking, you know, Lord Shiva lives under a tree, but his devotees are opulent, and Krishna lives, you know, in palaces, and his devotees are often poor. And then Prabhupada understood that Krishna was giving him a blessing by making him poverty-stricken, and Srila Prabhupada was really poverty-stricken. I mean, he was homeless for nearly 5 years. he would have to count not just rupees but paisa to take a train to try to get, you know, his magazine printed and so forth. He came to America, practically speaking, penniless and living at the mercy of others. But he could understand it was Krishna's blessing. How was it Krishna's blessing? Well, I can't speak as to how it was Krishna's blessing for Srila Prabhupada's own internal relationship with Krishna. But as far as the preaching goes, it's obvious that Srila Prabhupada's success was due wholly and solely to his spiritual potency. We couldn't possibly attribute Srila Prabhupada's success in preaching to material facility, because Prabhupada didn't have connections with celebrities, he didn't have connections with government, he didn't have a lot of money, he didn't have an infrastructure. He just didn't have that. I mean, eventually, like the Beatles getting involved and so forth, but Prabhupada didn't start that way. He started, you know, under a tree with a pair of cartels and barely able to scrape up a month's rent at a time. So it was part of the glorification of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada also talks about it as being a facilitating for his own relationship with Krishna. That's his own personal mood to talk about. So the glories of God and the existence of God are also demonstrable in his perfect destruction. All of the destruction of the Lord always results in new life. It always results in new glory. It always results in something wonderful. And he's able to destroy things completely in a way that there's no remnant, that they don't come back again. That's something that we're not able to do. Just like we can't create as expertly as him, we can't maintain as expertly as him, we can't destroy as expertly as him. So therefore, Prabhupada talks about the Bengali saying, God has 10 hands. If he tries to give you, you can't, you don't even know what to do with it. It's such abundance, and if he wants to take away, you have no way to hold on to it. Or as it says in the Bible, God gives and God takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. So we see the blessing of the Lord in giving, and we see the blessing of the Lord in taking away. I'll end with a couple stories from my own life. So one time in Puerto Rico, when I was there for 3 months learning like a Brahmacharini, it was 2001, I think so, 2001, 2002. And at that particular point in my life, I literally had nothing. I mean, I had no savings, I had no income, I didn't have a home, I had a residence in a fixed-up storage shed on my son's property. But I really had nothing, and I was there in Puerto Rico just living in the ashram and just doing whatever was being asked of me. So at one point, one of my god sisters, who was running a business, a cosmetics business, asked me to help with sales because one of her salespeople had left, and that's certainly not my propensity to be a salesperson of cosmetics. It is definitely not my nature or my propensity or something. I distinctly did not like it. I did it as a favor to her once a week. So I had each week I earned about $50 in commissions. So I had $100. It was all that I had, and I had it in my room. So usually I left my door unlocked, but on the Sunday program, when there were a lot of outside guests, I would lock my door. Well, that Sunday I forgot to lock my door, and I went to give the class in the temple room, and I spoke about detachment. So I spoke something like what I was speaking about today, but I had chosen the topic. I mean, in this case, the verse was given to me, and this is what it was about, but on that Sunday I had chosen this topic of detachment and, you know, being equipoised in the good and the bad. And then I go back to my room, and somebody had broken into my room and stolen that $100, which was all that I had. And I just started laughing, and I thought, oh, Krishna, you're so funny that I'm sitting on the Vyasasan speaking about detachment, and then immediately you take from me whatever I had. I just thought it was extremely humorous. So I had that experience. I also had a very interesting experience in London. It was that same year that I went to London in the summer to preach. And no, it must not have been that year. It was a few years later when I was in London in the summer to preach. And at that point, I did have a laptop computer. It was an old, used laptop computer. And it was the only thing I had that I could say belonged to me. Actually belonged, I guess, my clothes, but, you know, that actually belonged to me. So whatever other paraphernalia I was using really belonged to others. Anyway, so I had that, and the devotees put me up in an apartment that was a few blocks, a flat that was a few blocks from the Soho Street Temple. And I was staying with another devotee there. I can't remember who she was. Anyway, one evening I was giving the class at Soho Street and ended 9:30 at night. So we walked back to the flat, and it was broken into, and the laptop was stolen. So the police came, and they made a report, you know, and they, of course, never did anything. It wasn't like in the movies where the TV shows where the police actually catch the bad guys. It wasn't like that. Prabhupada had a similar experience when his paraphernalia was stolen, that the police just make a report and then leave, you know. And they told me, frankly, they said, we're not even going to attempt to catch this thief. I thought, oh, why are you making a report? Anyway, they were there till maybe 2 in the morning. And I was just sitting around and saying, Krishna, why? Why? You know, I use my laptop in your service. It's the only thing that I had that was mine. You know, it was all that I had. Well, why did you take it away? I was very confused. So at least I had my data backed up. Anyway, I went to the town president, you know, we told him what happened, Mahadudi Prabhu, and he said, we'll take up a collection to get you a new laptop. And I said, well, you don't need to do that. I said, it wasn't your fault. I mean, this was way before crowdfunding. Anyway, so he did that, and I think we, you know, I was there maybe another week, and over that week we collected maybe 50 pounds or 100 pounds. And then on the last day, they made a big push, and devotees gave a whole lot of money, and they gave enough money that I was able to buy a brand new laptop and even a set of speakers. Remember that I had, after that I got a good sound system. And I thought, wow, you know, Krishna, you had my laptop stolen so you could replace it with something better. So in the first instance, it was Krishna seeing, you know, can you just, do you just talk about detachment, or can you actually be detached? And I felt actually great wealth in the first one, the first instance where Krishna had my $100 stolen. I felt that the wealth of detachment and the wealth of renunciation was a much higher wealth than $100. And in the second instance, I saw that when Krishna takes something away, he always gives something better, whether it's a better tangible thing, like a better computer, or whether it's a better intangible thing, like a sense of detachment and a sense of peace, or something that's better. And ultimately, when Krishna takes away all of our material attachments and our designations and this and that, he gives himself. He gives himself. You know, and if our hands are all full with our upadis, we have no room. We have no room. So anyway, this is a perfect destruction, and it's part of the glories of the Lord. It's part of the argument that there is a God, because he can do these things far beyond any human being. So, we have some time for questions and comments.
Hare
Krishna Balabhadra
Prabhu. I really appreciated your personal experiences that you shared up to us in the class there. It just really touched me. But this is mostly a talking question here. You spoke earlier about destruction, about how the modern scientists, they don't know how to deal with destruction because of their own experiences of having created something which they're not able to dispose of very nicely, basically plastics. So my question basically is, this must be the intellectual members of society these days. Why are they persistently maintaining the same disposition of creating more plastics, you think, if they can't figure out how to deal with it?
Well, I guess you'd have to ask them that question. I mean, I have a really hard time trying to understand psychologically why people do stupid things. You know, I have a hard time understanding why I do stupid things, what to speak of why other people do stupid things. I mean, we could say from a Shastric point of view that the intellectuals, the scientists in society are not being guided by Brahminical culture and Brahminical principles. And often they're in the pockets of corrupt Vaishyas, corrupt Shudras, and corrupt Kshatriyas. So the Brahmanas are supposed to themselves cultivate Brahminical principles. You know, if the so-called Brahmanas, if the people in Brahminical occupations are drinking and smoking and having illicit connections and so many things, they're not going to have the clarity to make the right decisions. And furthermore, if they're financially beholden to people who are lower than them, they're also not going to have the clarity to make good decisions. So that we can say, according to the Shastra, you know, it becomes a very short-sighted thing. So short-sightedness is not a bad thing when it comes to people who are naturally Shudras. It's actually a very good thing for the Shudras to just be concerned for what the work they're doing in the present. That it's this very present-mindedness is a great quality for the Shudras. But if you have somebody who has that kind of mentality and they're taking the post of an intellectual or a scientist, they're taking the post of someone in government, they're taking the post of someone in business, then they ruin those fields of work. Or if they control those in those fields, they ruin their fields of work. Or if you have someone who's a Vaishya, Vaishyas are supposed to, they're supposed to be profit-minded, but they're also supposed to think in terms of sustainability and regenerative businesses. They're supposed to be thinking long-term. And if they're not trained properly, I was just reading a purport in the fourth canto about Dhruva Maharaj, and Prabhupada was saying that people may have a Brahminical, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra spirit, but if they're not trained properly, then they won't exhibit that spirit in a way that's conducive to a happy life for themselves and others. So I see it as some, you know, combination of, on an individual level, that people are not following the dharma of their field, and on a societal level that we're not training people and we don't have the proper interaction between people in the different fields.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed your class.
Oh, thank you. Anybody else have any other question or comment?
I'm going to say I very much liked your personal descriptions about things that have happened to you. It's, at least with the examples that you gave, there were things that you could almost immediately see, you know, how the subscriptions are arranged. For myself, that happens sometimes, but other times, really serious things have happened, and I still can't figure out why this happened or how it would be material or spiritually a benefit to me.
That's there. I mean, I had another story that it took me 15 years to understand how it was beneficial. You know, it was actually, I don't want to tell the whole story now, but it was pretty horrific. That, you know, my lifetime dream was ripped from me by some of the bad management of an ISKCON leader. And it was a dream I'd literally had my whole life. And it was just taken from my family. And I couldn't see the good side in it at all. In fact, I didn't see it at all as Krishna. I saw it as mismanagement by this leader, and I didn't see its relationship with Krishna. I spent 4 years being furious at this leader, and you know, I'd say vengeful even. It was really a bad place to be. And after about 4 years, you know, we were settled in a different situation, and life was going on. Things were good in our life. And 15 years later, the situation changed such that I could see that had we stayed in the situation I was so attached to, everything I wanted would have been destroyed no matter what. And that by Krishna destroying it when he did, he saved me from utter destruction. You know, a little destruction saved me from utter destruction and was a great benediction to everyone in my family. And it was, I could see all over, all around, in every direction, up and down and back and forth, that it was a great blessing. But, you know, for 4 years I was angry and vengeful and hurt and upset, and I really didn't see Krishna's hand in it at all. And after that I just kind of resigned myself to it. But even then, it was a total, you know, it was then 11 years later when I saw it as a blessing. And that experience convinced me that sometimes it takes a very long time to see things as how they are really blessing and how it's a really a wonderful thing. And it also convinced me that there's probably some things I'm not going to understand in this life at all. You know, that I'll look at in this life and it just seems, horrible and abominable and disgusting and devastating, and I can't see any good in it at all. But I've come to the conviction that at least once I'm out of this body, I'll be able to look at everything and say, oh, that was perfect. It was perfect. It was really a blessing. It didn't look like it at the time, but it was really a blessing. And I read a story, I'm sure you've all heard this, but anyway, I read a story of this a minister. He was visiting a family where their child had been murdered in her bed by an intruder. You know, young child, anyway. You know, it's horrific, horrific thing. And it had been very recent when the minister came there, and the father was talking to the minister, and he showed the minister a picture that was embroidery, if you're familiar with embroidery. And he said, you know, if you look at the back of the embroidery, you see a lot of knots and you see a lot of, you know, disorganized string. And if you turn it over, you see a pattern and you see the artwork and you see the beauty. And he said, often in this life, we just see the backside. We just see the disorderly string. And if we look on the other side, we see everything orderly. I'm pretty sure it was in this forum that I was talking about, you know, picking up earthworms, that when I go for a walk in the morning, especially if it's rain, that there's often earthworms on the road. And I know if they stay on the road, they'll die. I mean, it's absolutely for sure. And so I pick them up to put them on the grass. But when I pick them up, they can't see. You know, they don't know who I am. To them, I'm a bird, you know, picking them up to eat them. And they, even once I put them in the grass, they swarm around for a while before they settle in. So our vision is like that. And I think we can take the things that we can see, the things that we can understand, the things where we're like, oh, this is a blessing. This is a blessing. And use those as the basis for having faith in the things we can't understand. And to see that ultimately there's no actor other than the Lord. It's not really, you know, the nasty temple president. It's not really the nasty politician. It's not really the hurricane. Whatever it is, it's not really the stock market crashing or, you know, our falling down the stairs or whatever it may be. But it's all the Lord. It's all the Lord. And if we see that it's the Lord, then we can have some faith that I may not understand right now. You know, I may not understand. And I think the reason that we don't understand right away is that we're just not mature enough. And if Krishna would explain to us, it would just upset us. Or Krishna has some plan for us that if we did understand at the time, we wouldn't be able to execute the plan. You know, sometimes we have to have things covered in order to execute the plan, in order to come out on the other side. You know, I'll end here with one last story of a friend of mine, Krishna Priya, who lives here. So for many years, she was the head pujari here, and if there was many years where she was the head pujari and the temple president. So she's very, very attached to the deities here. And there was an occasion, I'm sure there was many, many occasions, where her duties as temple president and head pujari were just overwhelming. And so she was standing in front of the deities and she said, Radha Golokananda, I need a break. I just feel so overwhelmed. Please, can I have a break? Now, any of you who've been to North Carolina, the temple is a geodesic dome and it's on the second floor. And the stairs coming down from the temple, they're wooden stairs. So she walks out of the temple and she falls down the stairs. And she broke her hip and she broke her ankle. And so there she's lying on the at the bottom of the stairs, you know, in physical pain, but laughing and said, I didn't ask for that kind of a break. You know, but she ended up, she had 6 weeks where she was bedridden. And she said during that time, she spent all of her time chanting and reading the Shastra. And basically she didn't have to do any management. So Krishna found his way to give her to literally break her bones and give her a break. But she was able to see Krishna. She was able to see Krishna and to say, oh, this is Krishna being very funny. So I think if we really try to see Krishna in it, then at least we can have faith. Kamalini, yes, do you have a question?
Mute myself. Hi, thank you for such a nice class. But in the purport, it's, it says this sentence here about Kalki. It
yes.
says, at the end of this Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear in the incarnation of Kalki, and his only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. After that killing, another golden age will begin.
Yes.
So, I know I had heard that he will kill all of the bogus kings on the earth. So here, he's saying he's going to kill
everyone,
all humans.
Well, there are statements in the Bhagavatam about kings who are in a state of deep trance in the Himalayas who are going to come and repopulate the earth after Kalki kills everyone.
Well, Devaki and Maru, it says they've been waiting. They're waiting all the
right.
time. So they don't get old and die. They just
That's
stay.
Right.
All right, so it said he will come in the 12th canto, rescue eternal religion.
Mm.
So it's going to be like total destruction, like a big war zone. And then it's, you know how we know there's like winter and mm-hmm. then spring.
Yes.
But it sounds like it's going to be like the coldest winter and then all of a sudden, you know, blossoming Satya Yuga. So how does that work? It's just like, you know what I mean? All of a sudden? Or is it going to be very gradual?
I really don't know. There's a devotee who wrote a novel called The Yoga Zapper, where he wrote a fictional account of how the transition is going to happen from the end of Kali Yuga to the beginning of Satya Yuga. But I don't think we have that many details. But we do know that even after a very cold winter, there can be a beautiful spring. You know, we see that happen. We see that, you know, complete devastation always brings forth new life. But I do take it when Prabhupada's saying all the human beings, that we do know that there are some persons who are not killed by Kalki, who are waiting on the earth in a state of yogic trance where they're not aging, to then institute the next Satya Yuga. So we do know that. And that, but exactly how it happens, I mean, we do hear about a gradual destruction in the Kali Yuga, but it sounds like what Kalki does is doesn't take that long. Who knows? I mean, wars can sometimes go on for years. So that, as I say, those, I'm not familiar with those details. Does the war that Kalki institutes, is it a, you know, a 1 week war? Is it a month long war? Does it take 10 years? Is it a 100 years war? I don't know. I don't know of any information. There is, I think, a Kalki Purana that I might even have a copy of, but I haven't read it. So Balabhadra says 100 years of reign. Well, there's always a sandhya between the yugas. You know, just like between day and night, there's the dawn, there's a sunset. There's always a sandhya, there's always a juncture time. You know, in the seasons, like right now, we're moving from fall to winter here in Hillsboro. And, you know, it's a juncture time where we're moving, you could say, from summer to fall. There's a time where sometimes it gets really hot and then sometimes it's really cold. And eventually it's fully fall. And then there's a sandhya time to the winter. So it's also, I would assume that that's also going to be there, that there's always some juncture time between all of the yugas. So there's some gradual healing of the earth and gradual bringing forth a very high-class people. But thank you, yes, I had noted that in the purport, but I didn't specifically speak about Kalki. Duma ke dumivam kimapi karalam, he will come like a comet, and he will destroy all of the evildoers.
I think it says prophet on the door.
I believe there's a sign.
It's just prophet.
They told me to come look from the bathroom.
They told you to open the door that says prophet?
So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.